FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon. This is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. And you're with Louise Taffer, as always. And it's great to be back in the studio. I was out of office yesterday at the PFA's History Football Conference. And if you want to listen to anything that went on yesterday from that event, we were broadcasting live and you can head to SoundCloud to hear all of the podcasts. Well, the lines are open if you want to join in on the conversation. That number is 0399 44 99 99, or you can send me a message on 0428 933 345, or you can tweet to me at FNR_radio. Well, you're listening to the daily FNR News Hour, and Sydney FC unveil their new head coach. We'll hear from Chairman Scott Barlow. Defending champions Germany have dropped a selection bombshell by leaving 2014 World Cup final goalscorer Mario Götze out. Yes, the attacking midfielder and World Cup winner won't be going to Russia. Aston Villa and Socceroos skipper Mille Jedinak got another chance, or has another chance, to see English Premier League promotion after drawing nil-all with Middlesbrough and winning 1-0 on aggregate. All of those highlights to come. Well, the Newcastle Jets have advised that mid-season recruit Pato Rodriguez will not return to the club for the 2018-19 A-League season. Melbourne Victory could be set to lose some of their young players who failed to get game time this season. Pierce Waring is in Japan and reportedly trialling with a J-League outfit. Now, the 19-year-old played two senior games for Victory this season. His only domestic appearance came in the final 4 minutes of Victory's 3-0 win over Adelaide United, and that was back in February. Now, Japan allows dual nationality players to be regarded as domestic until 22 years old, by which point they must renounce one nationality. Eden Hazard set to leave Chelsea in the summer if his demands aren't met. Yes, it's been reported the 27-year-old is holding out on signing a new £300,000-a-week contract to see what happens during the transfer window. The Belgian star has 2 years left on his current deal, but he's eyeing off a move to Real Madrid. In other news, Andres Iniesta has been approached to join a Qatari team. The deal is set to be structured similar to former teammate Xavi because it's not just about playing. Iniesta's business and branding interests are going to be taken into account. And finally, tomorrow is the Europa League final, Atletico against Marseille. And we have FNR's Euro boys Adriano and Rick to preview that in our play of the day. Well, those are the headlines. We begin with the news coming out of Sydney FC. Hall of Fame member and 2010 A-League double winning captain Steve Corica as its new head coach, and chairman Scott Barlow announced it all today.
At the Sydney Opera House to announce Steve Corica as Sydney FC's new A-League head coach. This appointment brings to an end what has been an extensive recruitment process. We interviewed a short list of candidates from around the world, in fact, a number of outstanding candidates, but it was clear to myself and to the other members of the Sydney FC board that Steve was the right man for the job and the right man to take us forward. Steve has been with us at Sydney FC from day one as a player, a captain, youth coach, assistant coach, and now as our club's head coach. He knows what it means to be part of our great club. And Steve has played a central role in our many A-League achievements in recent seasons. He's proven himself to be an outstanding coach, and he is now well and truly ready to take on this role. Importantly, Steve's appointment provides our club with a level of continuity, a consistency of approach, as we look to build on our successful foundations. But also, Steve will be expected to make adjustments where necessary to put his stamp on the role, and we know that he will do exactly that. Today, as we look across the A-League, it's fantastic to see that there are a number of young, modern football coaches, Australian football coaches, applying their trade and making their mark in the A-League. And we have every confidence that as the head coach of Sydney FC, Steve will now prove himself to be a leader amongst this group. Steve, on behalf of everyone at Sydney FC, congratulations on this appointment. We look forward to continuing to work with you and to drive our club forward and deliver more success and more titles to our members and fans. Thank you.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's Sydney FC's chairman Scott Barlow unveiling the club's new head coach to succeed Graham Arnold. The 45-year-old Steve Corica has experienced 8 years within the Sky Blues coaching setup and takes the next step on his coaching journey. Moving on in World Cup news, it's just 30 days until the opener in Russia and every country is confirming their squads. Socceroos head coach Bert van Marwijk announced his 26-player squad yesterday, and six players have been cut from the initial 32 preliminary squad. They include Alex Gersbach, Apostolos Giannou, Mitch Langerak, Jamie McLaren, Alexander Shujnar, and Bailey Wright. Now, van Marwijk said that while it was difficult to make the required cuts to his preliminary selection, he feels he will leave or he will have a balanced and eager group of professionals to work with in Turkey and Austria. Now, as you can imagine, the news today in the major papers around the country was surrounding Jamie McLaren not making the team. Yesterday at FNR's outside broadcast, as I mentioned a little bit earlier from Lakeside Stadium at the PFA's Football History Conference, I spoke to former Socceroos assistant coach Scott Miller about Jamie McLaren, and he offered a perspective that not many journalists have raised, and it's simple. McLaren doesn't fit in with the style and formation Bert van Marwijk is going to take.
Ultimately, being the head coach, you're employed to make these tough decisions. However, any decision based upon personnel as a coach is always based upon your system and structure and what you want to play. And you look at the identity or system that he's possibly going to look to play, especially in those first two friendlies. That system doesn't necessarily support a Jamie McLaren style.
Okay.
His penetration is going to come from wide areas as opposed to a 9 or a 10 centrally.
Yep.
And he wants his 9 to 10 to be that reliable platform playing in that 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, depending on how you look at it. So I think the decision is based upon system and style and how he wants to find the balance of the team. I admire Jamie. I tried to manipulate his mindset before he joined Brisbane when I first took over at Newcastle, because I could see his development, and so could a lot of people apparently, because he was very difficult to sign at the time. He must be disappointed, there's no doubt, but he must recognise that he has made a significant step in his career, and Jamie McLaren's career won't be defined if he attends this World Cup or not. He's still a young player. He's playing at a football club now at a higher level than he ever has. He had a difficult year. Everyone's almost forgotten about his move to Germany, and he found it very difficult. The manager was sacked very soon after he arrived, which meant he had to move on. So what's he learnt about himself, right? So it's resilience. He's learnt a massive amount of resilience in the first 12 months of his European career, and this is another setback, but it'll be up to him how he defines the setback. And certainly from the reports suggesting he knew he wasn't going to the World Cup before, he certainly didn't look back. And he took action and utilised that as motivation and scored fantastic 3 goals.
Former Newcastle Jets head coach and Socceroos assistant coach Scott Miller. And I said to Scott, not many understand the why behind decisions like this made by head coaches.
Good question. The why is the most significant, right? And it's all very well for media personalities, etc., to have an opinion upon why someone should go to the World Cup. However, does that person recognise the philosophy or the principles in which that manager wants to play? Does he identify the balance within the team, technically, physically, mentally?
Yep.
And that's one thing you have to take in consideration, mentally as well. Azani adds a different identity to the team. And with that, a technical quality and threat that Jamie wouldn't be able to contribute to. It's an interesting one. Playing against a team, you do identify these key players very early as ones that can influence the game, and Australia haven't had many of them recently. And I'm just really grateful that a manager with such a short-term contract has had the mindset to aspire numerous young Australian footballers to provide someone like that an opportunity.
Scott Miller chatting to me yesterday and certainly providing a lot of valuable perspective on some of Bert van Marwijk's team selections. Well, FFA boss David Gallop said something similar to Scott, that Jamie McLaren is young and might be a prospect for the next World Cup.
Of course it's disappointing, and he's been scoring goals as well, but there's only that 26 spots to be whittled down to 23, and he's a young guy. You know, who knows, there's another World Cup in 4 years, and you'd have to say he'll be up there in calculations for that one.
Well, I'm hearing Jamie McLaren says he wants to leave German Bundesliga 2 club Darmstadt. Now, Hibs boss Neil Lennon is certainly keen to retain McLaren, while the German Bundesliga 2 outfit's intentions are unclear after they avoided relegation. Now, McLaren told 442, "Personally, I don't want to go back to Germany." Well, another talking point for the former Socceroos assistant coach Scott Miller was Australian goalkeeper Mitch Langerak.
Wow, some interesting names, and especially Mitch Langerak. I mean, I worked with Ange Postecoglou in 2014, and Mitch was a stalwart then. He was involved, number two, number one, always fighting for that position, and now he's been overtaken. So this is a tough point in his career. Where is he playing? Has he plateaued? What's his next level? Can he get back to this level of football? But the challenge is, for a manager, it's your decision. And I felt, having been a head coach, it's about trusting the player.
Mm.
Not only can they understand the philosophy and principles, but how do they fit into the team dynamic, and yep, what do they add? That's always a big thing. But the undetermining line is trust. Can I trust them? And I guess that's how squads are formulated. Balance, system, but also trust. Because you can't quantify that necessarily, but it's a feeling. And we are human, and football is an emotive game.
Scott Miller on FNR. And if you're just joining me, I'm talking some of the players who didn't make the Socceroos 26-player squad ahead of their upcoming friendlies before the World Cup. Optus Sports' Richard Bayliss was on FNR's Road to Russia yesterday, and he too weighed in on the discussion, saying the biggest loss out of all of the six who were cut from the team was this player.
Bailey Wright, though, for me, is the most unlucky. Mm. And this is the one that I think, this is the one that could potentially hurt the Socceroos, which is probably a big statement to make, because, you know, he's an old-school English-type, hard-as-nails kind of centre-half, but it's what he provides off the field. And everyone will say, that's been around that Socceroos unit in the last couple of years, that Bailey Wright is at the heartbeat of their sort of the dressing room. He's very vocal. He brings a lot to the group. He galvanises everybody. He's a leader in the championship as well, played 36 games. He does have a future with the Socceroos as well. So him having a presence like that off the field in a 23 at a big tournament, I feel like we're going to miss that. And that, to me, is the name that stands out amongst, as you say, a few that were arguably pretty hard done by.
Optus Sports' Richard Bayliss on FNR, and saying that Bailey Wright adds a lot of experience on and off the pitch. Well, there's another player who does the same and has caused much discussion from many of the Australian papers today, and that's Socceroos talisman Tim Cahill. Headlines have said conspiracy of Cahill inclusion because Socceroos sponsor Caltex revealed a number of its petrol stations would be rebadged as Cahill Tex, as our national team embark on its campaign to Russia. Well, FFA boss David Gallop rejected the claims.
And Tim Cahill is on the cusp of being part of all four. What a great achievement. If he can be there for the final 23 players, then it says it all about what he's done for Australian football. He's there at the crux moments when we've needed a goal, even in the last year. The back end of his career, he's been there and scored goals for us when we've needed him too. So he'll be going to Turkey to show Bert van Marwijk that he's a guy that should be in that final 23. And I don't think any of us could doubt that he'll be in with a red-hot chance of being in Russia, his fourth consecutive World Cup. Congratulations to the other players who've made it. Of course, commiserations to a few who missed out overnight. It's an exciting time in Australian football for us to be going to a fourth consecutive World Cup in Russia in just a few weeks' time. And these service stations are going to be a reminder of just how important it is to the nation. Congrats to Tim Cahill, to Richard and the Caltex people, to everyone else. I hope you're on board for what should be a a fascinating few weeks for football. We've got tough opponents, France, Denmark, Peru, but who knows, we'll give it a red-hot crack and hopefully we will do really well. So thanks for being here this morning.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's David Gallup. Now, The Age's Michael Lynch said the problem with Cahill Tech's campaign was that it will make football fans think the fix has long been in for Cahill to be selected, irrespective of his form, fitness, sharpness and readiness. Well, Optus Sports' Richard Bayliss also commented.
Obviously, today they announced that Cahill Tech, instead of Caltex, the service stations will be Cahill Tech, and I'd actually heard wind that was going to happen from about 2 months ago. So it's not like they orchestrated it around this team announcement, but I think it looks pretty ordinary for them today. I think there's a place for Tim in this squad, undoubtedly, and probably for the same reasons that I just mentioned for Bailey Wright, in terms of what these guys provide off the park. You know, in terms of on the field, he's never going to play 90 minutes at a World Cup again. We don't expect to see that. But it's, I guess, what you bring to the group and potentially what you can add in the dying moments of the game as well.
That's Optus Sports' Richard Bayliss. Well, the fact is, people, Cahill was involved in the Socceroos qualifying campaign, and Cahill has the ability and strength to score goals in crucial times, which can ultimately get us out of the group stage. And don't forget, Cahill is really why we are heading to Russia, especially after scoring that crucial double against Syria, which took us into the playoffs.
1-1! Cometh the hour, cometh the man! International goal number 49 for the skipper, Timmy Cahill. Cahill, there it is! A half century of international goals for Timmy Cahill. Deadlock broken.
With thanks to Fox Sports, and former Socceroo Archie Thompson also backs Cahill's inclusion.
Oh, definitely. You need that. And look, I was just speaking to someone before. There's obviously been a lot of critics about age and his selection and all this sort of thing. But what people don't know and what they'll never know is I think once you get into that change room and the way that he is with players, the way he motivates players, the way he gets the best out of players, the way he gets the best out of himself, that's what people don't see. And I think he's going to have a bigger impact in this World Cup, maybe not so much on the field, but like I said, what people don't see in the change and what he brings, it's going to be very important to this young side, very inexperienced side, a side that pretty much has been criticised this whole campaign.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's former Socceroo Archie Thompson. And there's plenty of talking points. You can head to FNR's Twitter to get involved in the discussion at FNR_radio. Well, the World Cup is just 30 days away, and Richard Bayliss gave us an idea of Optus Sports coverage from Russia.
We'll be live on our coverage for up to 11 hours, and one night, actually, when Australia play France, it'll be 12 and a half hours straight of live.
Wow.
So we're going all out, and I think it'll be stuff that viewers really enjoy as well. I think we're trying to provide a different perspective on the game and sort of maybe a different tone as well. You know, we want to be younger and we want to be, you know, we're all fans here at Optus, so we don't want to be, you know, just bringing people to games. We want to be enjoying them at the same time. So in terms of how that looks, we'll be live from 9 p.m. Eastern time every night during the tournament, and that'll go right the way through until 7:30 in the morning. It'll start with Mel McLaughlin and Mark Salter on a show called From Russia with Love, which will be, I guess, a casual kind of light-hearted way to kind of just feel your way into the onslaught of football to come. And for those guys in the morning, we have two shows. From 6 a.m, Jules Breach, Michael Bridges will be joined by some guests. And then at 6:30 Eastern time, I'll be in Red Square live for my show with some guests as well. So, you know, we want to provide the tournament narrative as much as just the games. And as we know with the World Cup, it's kind of it's never-ending. You never quite know where to look.
Richard Bayliss on FNR, giving us an idea of Optus Sports coverage from Russia. Well, this is the FNR News Hour on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. On the other side of this break, more World Cup news.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day!
Now, can't spell it, Ronaldo!
You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
This is the FNR News Hour, and good afternoon to wherever you're tuning in from. World Cup hero from 2014, Mario Götze, has been left out of Lowe's preliminary squad ahead of Russia. Here's ESPN's Shaka Hislop.
It just doesn't get any better, and it speaks to how strong this squad is that Götze does not even get in. This is a player who scored in the final 4 years ago for Germany to lift the World Cup, and yet still not even in this squad. It speaks to Jürgen Löw's not only his talent pool, but the authority that he commands and is able to make these selections, because I don't think many managers would have that kind of luxury or that kind of press. Time and time again, you speak about German players in this squad who maybe haven't had great season. You could probably say the same about Thomas Müller coming into this squad. Hasn't been great. You've got a Mario Gomez, 32 years old, in this squad, yet he brings something that the others don't. And that's the thing. No matter what, it seems no matter who Germany name, you know they're going to be there or thereabouts. Understandably near the top in terms of favourites. And I expect them to get to the final.
ESPN's Shaka Hislop. And yes, Mario Götze left out of Germany's World Cup team. And Germany's national team coach, Joachim Löw, has extended his contract for the next 4 years. In England, former Manchester City goalkeeper Joe Hart and also Arsenal's Jack Wilshere have also failed to make the team for Russia. And for Shaka Hislop, he is surprised someone with Hart's experience wasn't picked up.
I think Jack Wilshere continues to be an incredible talent, but his problems are of his own making. And if he's out of the squad, he's only got himself to blame and himself to look at. I am a little bit surprised that Joe Hart has been left out, not because he's been playing that well, but because you have three young, inexperienced, at this level goalkeepers, and you pick two and maybe have somebody with experience, at least to be that kind of level head in the dressing room, someone that those two can go to.
But they've got coaches for that, Shaq. I take Joe Hart sitting his backside for what?
You're going to take somebody to sit on their backside.
Yeah, we'll take a youngster that can learn from it and go forward. All this taking the old stooges all the time to do the same job and get knocked out. What was it, the last World Cup? They were bottom of the group.
Granted, but I'm not sure what you learn by sitting on your backside. I mean, it's a great experience, but I'm not sure what you take away, especially if...
Well, you take the experience away, you take the training away.
You take those three goalkeepers in Pope, Pickford and Butland. Pickford and Butland have conceded more goals than almost anybody else in the Premier League. Pope is in fantastic form, has kind of come in late. And as a result, Southgate has a decision to make, and it's only that uncertainty. I think that Joe Hart isn't there. Otherwise, I go with experience at least for a voice in the dressing room.
That's ESPN's Shaka Hislop and Craig Burley chatting over Joe Hart not being included in England's World Cup squad. And there's plenty to talk about leading into Russia. All of the participating countries are finalising their teams, and I'm talking all the players who have been left out. Of course, only 23 players can be on that plane to the World Cup. Well, in other international news, former Borussia Dortmund manager Thomas Tuchel has been appointed PSG's new coach for the next two seasons. Some big news in Italy. Goalkeeping legend Gianluigi Buffon has scheduled a press conference for tomorrow, widely expected to be about him retiring. Moving on, the Europa League final is on tomorrow morning. Atletico meet Marseille in Lyon. And Atletico are two-time Europa League champions, while no French side has ever won Europe's second-tier continental competition. Atletico's coach Diego Simeone is in the stands after being given a four-game suspension. And this is what ESPN's Shaka Hislop and Steve Nicol had to say about the upcoming match.
No.
Why?
As much as I'd like to see West Ham's Dimitri Payet win it, I just feel Atletico Madrid have been the best team in this competition for quite some time. Made harder work of Sporting and Arsenal in the last two rounds than I thought they would. But it's theirs to lose, and I just don't see them dropping the ball, not at this stage.
West Ham's Dimitri Payet,
he jumped
ship and ran back to France.
Learned everything he knows about football at West Ham.
If there's a team that can dampen flair in anybody, it's Atletico Madrid. And Marseille recently have been doing well because of the flair they've shown on the field. Not only can Atleti dampen any flair, But if you've got Costa and Griezmann up front, you're in business.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and it will be Fernando Torres' last chance to win continental silverware. The Europa League final is live at 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on beIN Sports. Atletico against Marseille. In the Championship, Aston Villa have drawn nil-all with Middlesbrough to set up a Championship playoff final. The win was that bit more special as former Villa defender Lloyd Samuel, who was just 37 and made 199 appearances for the club after signing in 1998, tragically died in a car accident last night. A minute's applause was held at Villa Park before the match to pay tribute.
Snodgrass trying tracking him every inch of the way. Back to Snodgrass off Grabber. There's Adoma. And in comes Horahan. What a challenge by Friend. Button trying another one over the top. Again, Dale Fry has been found wanting. Adoma. The deflection left Aaron Randolph rooted. Unfortunately for Middlesbrough, it's just gone wide. Bamford bearing down. Little bit of confusion at the back here. Traore now as Johnson outside his penalty area when he handled there. Big decision for Mike Dean to make. He's given the free kick. And what colour is the card going to be? Yellow. Downing. Oh, he's rattled the crossbar. The finest of margins on the biggest of games. And Downing, so close to levelling it up. Blasted into Mili Jedinak. Well, Steve Bruce said Aston Villa are a giant of a club that needs waking up. And this is a night that sends them soaring back in the right direction. Agony for Middlesbrough, who fell short in the end. But for Steve Bruce and Aston Villa, they take their place at Wembley on May the 26th. With that mighty shootout, with the prize, a place in the Premier League.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and Aston Villa get a second chance at Premier League promotion. Here's some more reaction after the game about how much it really means for the club.
They have done it! 0-0 in the second leg here. Pushes Aston Villa into the playoff final. There's a pitch invasion all around us. The Villa players are hugging each other. The fans are hugging each other. The backroom staff are hugging each other. And now the mini celebration can begin. Book your flights, book your tickets, book your trains, fill up your cars. Villa are going to Wembley. A huge pitch invasion now as thousands pour onto the pitch to celebrate with the Villa heroes. Aston Villa will play Fulham for a place in the Premier League on Saturday the 26th of May. It's just over a week away and 38,000 Villans will be there at Wembley to see it.
Yes, Aston Villa's next obstacle is to get around Fulham. Well, this is the FNR NewsHour on FNR Football Nation Radio. Let's take a break. Coming up is our play of the day.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal!
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to the FNR News Hour, and it's time for our play of the day, which comes from the Euro Show. Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea previewed the Europa League final between Atletico and Marseille, and also spoke to Optus Sport's Richard Bayliss about their World Cup coverage.
The elephant in the room has to be Tim Cahill. He's only played, what, the best part of a half in the last 6 months, and all of a sudden he seems to be on the flight over to Moscow with you guys. What do you think of his role and what it's going to be at Russia?
Well, it's interesting, and I think the timing for the FFA probably couldn't have been any worse, because obviously today they announced that Cahill Tex instead of Caltex, the server stations will be Cahill Tex, and I'd actually heard wind that was going to happen from about 2 months ago. So it's not like they orchestrated it around this team announcement, but I think it looks pretty ordinary for them today. I think there's a place for Tim in this squad, undoubtedly, and probably for the same reasons that I just mentioned for Bailey Wright in terms of what these guys provide off the park. You know, in terms of on the field, he's never going to play 90 minutes at a World Cup again. We don't expect to see that. But it's, I guess, what you bring to the group and potentially what you can add in the dying moments of the game as well. But as you say, hasn't scored. Oh, he didn't score all season long. He's only played 60-odd minutes for Millwall. I mean, when was how long was the period of time that he scored his last three goals in? Jamie McLaren scored his last three goals in about 45 minutes. So if you make the comparisons between Cahill and some of the guys that missed out, it is kind of hard to sort of rationalise that. But at the same time, there are 23 guys in the squad, and there needs to be a place or a couple of places for guys that bring additional elements to the group. And I think that's what Tim does.
Richard, I have to ask you about Bert van Marwijk. In my time in Germany, I followed him very closely. Obviously, he was coach at Borussia Dortmund, also at Hamburg SV a little bit later, and he really had his critiques. So he didn't really have success there. Also in his stint at the Netherlands, 2008 till 2012, he wasn't overly successful. Yes, I know he led Saudi Arabia to the World Cup then, but I was really surprised giving Bert van Marwijk this gig, and then only for the World Cup. And afterwards, Graham Arnold will come to that. So how do you think the FFA handled that situation?
It's an interesting one. And I wonder whether Sydney FC had a big part to play in the Graham Arnold timing, because that was the thing, you know, parking van Marwijk for a second. I think the announcement that Graham Arnold was coming in, when they announced it, was a little bit odd. But I feel like Sydney FC would have said, look, we want to get it out there. We want to get on with our lives. With the national team, though, it sort of looks a bit haphazard. I think with van Marwijk himself, he's a guy that's come in. He doesn't see beyond June, July. He has no need to. It's not in his contract. And you can actually see in some of the selections that being reflected, because if you think about Jamie McLaren, he will be in the reckoning for at least a couple more World Cups. Tim Cahill won't be, but van Marwijk has come in and looked short-termist and gone, right, we need to do a job in the next couple of months. So from that point of view, you sort of can't really argue with his approach, because he's got a very focused vision on, you know, getting the Socceroos through the group. But you just have to weigh that up against, well, where are we going as a national team? So I feel like putting Van Marwijk in charge with a short-term contract, we will get what we get. We'll get a guy who's just aiming to get us through the group, and beyond that, nothing else really matters. So I'm fascinated to hear your thoughts around him, though, because, you know, he has had such a, I guess, an up-and-down career. He's highly rated from people that have worked with him, but then from a fan's perspective, you look at it and say, well, what has he really done that would give you the confidence? Obviously, 2010, taking Holland to the final when they were unfancied and they certainly weren't playing the beautiful football that the Dutch are used to, that stands out on his CV. I wonder how that would stack up, though, if he got us through the group, because it seems like this challenge is every bit as big.
Yeah, I was very surprised, especially at Borussia Dortmund, where the fans in the end really had protests against him and wouldn't attend the games unless van Marwijk is sacked. So that's like one of those pictures sticking to my head. So I guess, as you mentioned, highly respected among the players, but fans really didn't really like him wherever he was, also failing with the Netherlands back then. And also there was a reason in the end why he left Saudi Arabia despite leading them to the World Cup. So I actually thought initially it would be better to appoint a long-term coach for Australia even before the World Cup. So he actually gives these players that he wants to bring in an exposure at the biggest stage of them all. And that's an experience that is invaluable. As you mentioned, Tim Cahill, it's probably his last World Cup, and other players like McLaren will miss out. So I thought initially that it might be the wrong sign appointing towards the future for the Australian squad.
I was in full agreement with you at the time, Matt, as well, and remain there. One thing is for sure, though, certainly a number of talking points in the lead-up to this World Cup. But, of course, our congratulations go out to those who have made the preliminary squad, and we wish them all the best in the training camps. In the lead-up to, obviously, they will be hoping to make the final 23, June the 4th, the date that lists need to be finalised with FIFA for the commencement of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. And again, of course, Optus Sport, the only place you can watch all 64 matches of the 2018 FIFA World Cup live and on demand. Richard, I was at the 2010 and 2014 FIFA World Cups working out there in South Africa and Brazil. And while there are a few unlucky participants to miss out this time around, I can tell you the Chileans, who won't be there this time, and the Dutch previously as well, they have been among some of the very best fans at the World Cup. So hopefully the colour is still there with those who have taken their place. Of course, Iceland and Panama, the two debutants this time around. Overall, Richard, looking ahead to the World Cup itself, what most excites you about what's to come, not only from a Socceroos perspective, but just widely around the tournament itself?
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make around the colour that the fans bring. And obviously the Chileans are one, the Italians are always into it. But the other one, for me, is the Dutch. And one of my favourite memories from a World Cup was when I was in Porto Alegre, where the Socceroos were playing Netherlands. And the night before the game, you know, all the bars down the street were lined with people. And all of a sudden, you heard a brass band marching down the street, singing or playing Waltzing Matilda. And as you look down the road, they were all in orange. They were all the Dutch fans. Just that kind of moment sort of sticks with you because it goes far beyond the football game. It goes far beyond national boundaries, if you like. It's people that just bring in colour and expressing themselves and respect for their opposition as well. That's what I really liked about that. So I think, you know, you'll see those stories come out. I mean, whether it's an Egypt, for example, who, you know, it's been a while since they've been there. They've got a guy in Mo Salah who the whole country is pretty much stopping just to watch, and he could take them beyond the group stage. Then you've got Peru, yeah, they're missing their captain, and they've got a tough group along with us, but, you know, they haven't been to a World Cup in a long time. So, you know, there'll be plenty of nations and players and fans that'll help the void for those ones that have missed out, and that's what it's all about, you know, people taking their opportunity, but more than anything, just enjoying it. So, you know, if we can kind of reflect that in our coverage, that's kind of our plan, is to, you know, not just bring people the games, it's bring people the experience as well, because there's nothing quite like the World Cup, that's for sure.
Nothing like it at all. Very well said. I can remember from the streets of Copacabana, or call it Barata Ribeiro, the street there, and the Chileans walking down there, Italians as well. So it's a sad state of affairs for those nations, but obviously you mentioned a couple of nations who will do very well to bring some colour and culture to the tournament. Before we wrap up, your thoughts on who goes all the way and wins the World Cup?
Well, I think everyone's kind of saying Germany, and that's a smart bet. I think if you were to put money on it, I think the Germans would... Well, look, they'll go close. I mean, if they don't go beyond the semi-final, or at least to the semi-final, it will be a huge failure from them. The team I really would like to see do well, and I feel like they could, is Brazil. And the reason I say that is, with the World Cup, there's always a story to who wins or what happens. It's not just random or, you know, coincidence as to who wins. There's always a narrative to it. And having sort of been there and witnessed them get smashed 7-1 by Germany last time, the heartache that cost the, you know, the nation as well, I feel like on the back of the way they qualified, and having seen their squad name today, I mean, there are some guys in there that, you know, a little bit peripheral, but I think if they have their big guys stay fit throughout the tournament and they play the way they did in qualifying, I can see them going really far. And we've never seen a South American side win a European World Cup, and I feel like the redemption story from 4 years ago could be one that would be really, really enjoyable to see unfold. So the heart kind of says Brazil, whether or not they're up there with a Germany or even a France, or dare I say it, even a Belgium, I'm not too sure, but you know, I'd like to see Brazil do it.
Europa League final, it takes place tomorrow morning, of course. An intriguing match awaits, as I said. Marseille, Atletico Madrid, the match to be played in Lyon. So in France, slight advantage for Marseille, of course. Looking forward to this one because two sides who, well, both wanting to win, let's make no mistake about that, but Marseille with a little bit more to play for coming in to what should be a classic final.
Well, when you started to look at who would actually make or possibly make a final, Atletico Madrid was pretty much there and there, there and dust. I think between them, Arsenal, I think you had, you know, Borussia Dortmund. You may have said AC Milan as one of the teams that didn't make the Champions League but actually did qualify for the Europa League would probably be the other one. Marseille, you may have thrown in the mix, especially if they could have gotten some of their talent to stay on the pitch, stay healthy, and actually score and assist in a lot of goals. And that's exactly what you've got here. You've got arguably your premier team in the second club competition, and obviously a team that has risen up, done a lot better than a lot of people expected, and actually made it based on their merits.
Both sides with different paths through to the final. Of course, Marseille, they started in the group stage. They finished second in Group I of the Europa League competition. They were second, 4 points behind Salzburg. To get to this point, they saw off Braga from Portugal, Athletic Bilbao from Spain, so they've already taken care of a Spanish side, Leipzig from Germany, and then they took on Salzburg, again, in the semi-finals and took care of them after extra time. Of course, we remember that famous semi-final tie. So Marseille, they've certainly done it tough. They've had a very difficult run. Atleti, of course, they were very disappointing because they dropped out of the UEFA Champions League to eventual semi-finalists Roma. And Chelsea, they finished third there, dropped into the round of 32, and they came through also a fairly tricky path, defeating Nice, Lokomotiv Moscow, who were really no issue for them whatsoever, Sporting Lisbon in a tight tussle, as well as Arsenal in the other semi-final. So different routes to the final. Atleti certainly the favourites coming in, but with Champions League football at stake here for the victor, and obviously that means a hell of a lot more for Marseille, who aren't guaranteed of Champions League football just yet through France, given the fact that they're fourth in their current competition at the moment. Atleti, of course, will finish second in Spain. Marseille with an opportunity here in the stadium of Lyon to potentially deny Lyon or Monaco, depending on who finishes third in France, the chance of playing in the Champions League. So it sounds very busy. It's a big night ahead. But if Marseille win, they will assure themselves of a return to the UEFA Champions League, meaning that one of the other top sides in France will miss out. No French side has won. This is a big fact. No French side has ever won a UEFA Cup or UEFA Europa League. So Marseille aiming to become the first. This is the 47th final in the competition. So all to play for. Marseille with a little more to play for, without doubt. But looking forward to it. But how significant will Simeone's absence be? Because he was slapped with that ban, I believe a four-match ban. He will not be on the touchline for the final. They are already a thin squad. It's going to be tricky for Atleti against his hungry Marseille side, who have, well, they have shown some really great form recently in the French league, and they'll be looking to continue that good form. A hard-fought semi-final win. They've been scoring lots of goals. I remember a match recently against Lille. They put five past them, three on the road in another match. Can't remember who that was against, but they have played. Well, they were involved in that 3-3 draw at the weekend against Guingamp as well. But they're capable of scoring. This is why I'm interested in this fixture, though, because we know Atleti, they had a rare slip-up recently. They lost 2-0 at home to Espanyol. That was the first match that they had conceded at home in something like 12 fixtures. So, okay, Atleti aren't playing this match in Madrid. We know that. But defensively, they are so strong. But Marseille, when they get going, they can be very, very free-flowing and high-scoring. They put five past Leipzig in the quarterfinal stage of this competition. I can see Marseille scoring. Whether or not Atleti have the ability to score, because looking at their recent run of form, Atleti have not scored more than a goal in a game, not since a 3-0 win against Levante a month ago. So it's been some time. Lots of failures to score, a single goal here or there. Atleti not really firing up top. That's where if Marseille can get on top early, maybe pinch one early on, Marseille will be favoured for me to win.
But the only thing I'm going to say against that is these sort of finals, they generally start off as very defensive and dour affairs until both teams sort of wake up.
Generally, though.
Generally. But they then do wake up. The question is can Marseille get enough past Atletico's defence before Atletico's defence and their attack? Nate is star-studded. I mean, Griezmann up top of any team, and this could potentially be the last trophy he wins as an Atletico Madrid player before he does subsequently move on pre or post-World Cup. They're going to have to obviously get enough through that Atleti defence, which is very hard to break down, in order to actually hold and maintain and get something out of this game, because Atletico will come back at them, and they will come back strongly, very strongly. It's going to be very tough. Keeping Griezmann quiet, Luis Gustavo and Adil Rami are going to have their hands tied for 90-plus minutes in order to keep him very quiet. And you just don't keep these sort of superstars, especially at the very top level, and when the actual cream rises to the crop and it actually all matters, it's very hard to keep him quiet.
It is very hard, but that's where it'll be won or lost. We'll see the first 15-20 minutes. We'll get a very clear guide as to how the match will be played. I believe Marseille need to come to attack. I really feel they have to approach this match in a similar fashion. Most recent example I can think of, Roma-Liverpool second leg. Roma, okay, Liverpool still managed to take the lead and were very, very impressive, but Roma came to play. Roma against Barcelona as well. They came to play, they came to score. Atleti are clearly the better side here, and with that defensive prowess, if they can lock down Marseille, well, Atleti will be favoured to win. Marseille come, they put the pressure on the back four, press. ensure that they crack in early and a couple of shots at least, but maybe strike early, that will be the difference in this match for me. So I'm really excited about the match again, live on Bein Sports, Bein Sports Connect, or available later via catch-up if you miss the 4:45 a.m. kickoff time.
And there'll also be a little bit of a reminiscent party type atmosphere going on with Atletico, because this actually will be Fernando Torres' last match, last appearance in a final. So they're going to be up for it. I mean, just beyond actually winning a trophy and possibly qualifying for Europe in another way, even though they're already there, Atletico are not going to go down without a fight. And Gavin Gramera, I think, will probably start ahead of Torres. Torres will probably come on, make a cameo maybe with 15, 20 minutes to go. And I think that might be also enough to see them through, even though I'm still going to say Marseille to win it.
Well, Marseille, it's a tall order without doubt, but obviously the Champions League football, a big thing to play for. They've only won one of their 9 away games in the Europa League this season, whereas 5 of Atleti's last 6 away games haven't seen too many goals. So this for me will be a low-scoring affair. I don't think Marseille will be able to get on top. I am going to tip Atleti to win, and I'm going to tip them to win by a goal to nil very narrowly. I think it will go according to plan for Simeone, who, again, will be coaching from the stands. But their last 3 wins, Atleti, have all been 1-0, and I see this one ending in that way as well. They just find a way to defensively work their way into the game, pinch a goal. They're very clinical, we know. Lots of firepower up top, but they don't score lots of goals, and that's why I'm tipping Atleti to win by a goal to nil.
I'm going
to
go the opposite, just for a bit of balance. Thuvan and Payet to actually get on the score sheet themselves, 2-1.
You're listening to the FNR NewsHour, and that was our play of the day from the Euro Show. Adriano and Rick previewing the Europa League final between Atletico and Marseille. And the boys also spoke to Optus Sports' Richard Bayliss about the Socceroos team selection and World Cup. Well, Perth Glory's newly appointed CEO, Tony Piñata, just surprised me in the studio, and he's coming up on Football Q&A, so stick around. You've been listening to the FNR NewsHour, and I'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Thanks for your company.
FNR News with George Danikian and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.